Hello everyone, welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast with me, Michael Bailey. I'm with David Freezer and Paddy Davitt to talk over Norwich City's 1-0 win over Swansea in the Premier League. Boring Norwich, I suppose, would be one of the many jokes we could have at the expense of Saturday. But the fact is, Pad, 3 points. Pragmatism rules A-OK.
Works for me every time. Do we want to be in the Premier League, or do we, as in the royal we, Norwich, or do we want to be in the Championship? I think we all know the answer to that.
Not me and you, but although, you know, I do enjoy it.
No. It was a novelty value last season, Michael, but they needed the win. And as Alec Neil said, and as he did, it was all about the result, not the performance. And that was underlined, because Swansea could have been playing till now, and I don't think they'd have scored. So, you know, you move on, and as Alec Neil said, you know, in a week's time, nobody will really remember or recollect or probably care how Norwich played. The result is all that matters.
It was such a stark difference, isn't it? Because, I mean, Norwich, I think they were close to 65-odd% possession or something against West Brom. Saturday, we were treated to the complete flip side. Swansea, as you mentioned, Pat, they didn't really create a lot all game, apart from one chance for Gylfi Sigurdsson. Norwich actually had less of the ball, but they created, you know, a couple of really good chances and ultimately deserved it. And I would say all credit to Alec Neil for the fact that they turned it round like that so quickly. I mean, they did. The shape was different to Manchester City, but the approach was the same.
I think it was a brave approach to the game, wasn't it? Which you are not especially surprised to see from Alex Neil, but I don't think the fans were especially banging down the door for a negative defensive approach ahead of the game. So what I like about it is that Alex Neil had that foresight and showed that he's the man in control of the team and the club, and made the right call that I would have said the majority of people wouldn't have necessarily predicted ahead of the game. Obviously, as he said after the game, if it doesn't work out and you lose, then you end up with egg on your face, don't you? But they've pulled it off, and now that the big, it can almost be a big landmark in the season, and that they've shown they can go defensive. They've already shown that they can play on the front foot, so hopefully they've now got a good base to build from.
Yeah, what it does is it keeps opposition sides guessing, which I think is a really useful thing from that. Obviously, the comparison, the natural one, Paddy, is to what Norwich were doing under Chris Hughton. But this is different, isn't it? I don't want to embellish the performance or look with hindsight, but you got a better sense of what they were trying to do in attack with the ball, whereas almost the issue with Chris Hughton's sides was that they didn't quite know what they were doing with the ball, and they were just so slow and predictable as much as just behind the ball and defending.
Yeah, I think if we cast our minds back to the Hughton era, it was, and you got the sense that all they'd got drilled on all through the week was defensively without the ball, shape, and conversely didn't do a great deal with in terms of patterns of play going forward. And it was the old, can they nick someone on a set piece or an individual bit of magic, you know, that Tete goal, who was that against, I forget now.
Sunderland.
Yeah, exactly. So, and albeit Norwich did score from second phase set piece at the weekend, you know, there is a lot more to an Alec Neil attacking template than there ever was with Chris Hughton. So I don't think we need to fear a regression to that era where it was we'll cling on, we'll be lucky to be on the same pitch as a lot of these players and a lot of these teams, and if we get anything, we'll doff our cap and move on. I don't think you're ever going to get that deference with Neil. I think the word that keeps coming up all through the last few days during the game even is pragmatism. You know, he's a pragmatist and he doesn't want to win games like that, and he said as much after the game. But pragmatically, he needs to get that team out of the bottom reaches into the comfort of mid-table, and then you can be expansive then, not when you're looking over your shoulder.
And another fantastic comparison, you had Bournemouth playing Newcastle before the game. Johnny Howson, which you'll hear from later, says they were watching the game and sort of picking up on those stats. It's played out in front of them. But also, I think it got picked up in one of the Match of the Day programmes. There are so many of them now, that you've got Eddie Howe saying, well, we're not going to change our approach, this is how we go about things. And yet Norwich have shifted that, because they were just to sort of staunch in how they wanted to go about things.
Yeah, I think Alex Neil has said recently that he isn't stuck in his ways, isn't he? And that he was open to the idea of it, which is exactly what was needed. I've drawn the comparison in today's paper. I mean, there's the obvious comparison with Hughton, but I've drawn the comparison with Louis van Gaal at Man United, which is obviously a bold extreme. But they this season have gone back to basics, haven't they, on a different level. You know, they're hoping to push for the title and for success in the Champions League, but he has gone right back to basics, made sure they're solid, they don't concede goals, and they're picking up 1-0, 2-0 wins. You know, nobody's even blinked an eye at them beating West Brom 2-0 on Saturday, as they shouldn't, as it's Manchester United. But though West Brom had won at Old Trafford in the past two seasons, I think, so he's got that right, hasn't he? I think once you've got those basics right, you can build from there. And if once Norwich get towards 40 points, if they have to play negative football to get there, then you can try and bring in the attractive football and bring in the more established players from abroad and other teams in the Premier League and try and, you know, really establish yourself as a good side. But there's not many promoted teams who can come straight up and play good attacking football and be good enough to survive.
Can't believe we've mentioned Manchester United on this podcast. I'm so bored of talking about Manchester United. Whether they're, sorry, Dave. Whether they're exciting. And Wayne Rooney, is he in? Oh, who cares? Like, he's just not quite as good as he was four years ago.
He's saving himself for next summer, Rooney.
We are not talking about Wayne Rooney. That is the fact of it. We should talk about the team selection, I suppose. It was one we were all so eagerly waiting for. And, of course, John Ruddy started. That was the big pressure. And he probably had the kind of game he was dreaming of, which was very quiet.
Yeah, and obviously the shape helps. You know, if you've got a bank of four and you've got Tete and Gary O'Neill, as it was, it's not Malumbu in front. Allied, as I said at the outset, to a fairly toothless Swansea. That probably was the perfect mix for John, but he's certainly going to be a lot busier against Chelsea and Arsenal. So I don't think the debate's quite died a death.
No, it'll be interesting with him going back to Chelsea, I think, with all the bids over the last few years and what have you. You mentioned Gary O'Neill, who's done really well, I think, every game he's played so far, Pad. And he would, because Nathan Redmond was going to be involved, but didn't because he has a thigh injury. That's kept him out of the under-21, the England under-21s as well. Gary O'Neill would have started anyway, even if Redders had been fit.
Yeah, that's the sense I got. I mean, he referenced quite specifically as well the job he did against Everton, and referenced also the lad Kone, who he thought AU for Swansea did a similar job, cutting in off the flank, making a two up top as opposed to a one. So that level of detail tells me that, yeah, he would have started irrespective of whether Redmond or not. I think it'd probably been Wes, maybe he'd have dropped out. I don't think he'd have dropped Johnny Howson out. So and the interesting thing is he did what it said on the tin. So going into the Chelsea game now, do you bring back Malumbu? But he's shown constantly that he's not afraid to change it up. Horses for courses, that phrase. So I don't think it's a given Gary O'Neill will be running out of Stamford Bridge from the start, that's for sure, as good as he played.
He's got 2 weeks to recover, isn't he, was my initial thought, so he should be fine. But then I checked how old he was and he's only 32. Yeah. He's not 36. So it's not like...
Are you saying he looks 36, Dave?
No, but people are treating him a bit like he's almost retired, aren't they? And it's not like he's just stuck his head from the parapet from nothing. He's 32. He's got plenty of good time in his legs, and he said that I spoke to him after the game, and he said that the other players always laugh at how he's still one of the fittest players in the squad. So I think people maybe think he's a little bit older than he is, but I thought he was really good. His experience was really clear. Straight after the goal, Dimo Simbakani gave the ball away, O'Neill went and cleared that up, he got the booking in extra time, had that little bit of nous to make sure that they saw themselves over the line. I think you could probably do worse than keep O'Neill and Tete, drop Houlihan and bring Malumbu in just to make that midfield super, super solid at Chelsea, and then maybe chuck Wes and Mbakani on for the last 20 minutes, try and win it if you're still in the game.
Well, yeah, tuck in for Chelsea, of course. We'll talk about that in a bit. Well, I'll give you a choice, Pad. Do you want to talk about Alex Tete being captain, or the centre-back partnership, or the back four maybe, because we had Andre Wisdom back in there and they look pretty solid ahead of John and freshly shielded?
I think probably the latter, mate, given it was the first clean sheet of the season, and that was all into the weekend was all about the defence and John Rooney particularly. But and again, keep qualifying it, but poor as Swansea were, you know, it would have been a slightly stiffer examination if you're playing, I don't know, Costa or Giroud or Cazorla or Sanchez or whatever, as they will do in the weeks to come. So caveating it slightly, but they did what they needed to do. Ryan Bennett, I'll pick him out. I mean, I wouldn't say I was his greatest fan, but he was just uncomplicated in everything he did at the weekend. You know, he didn't try and do anything too out of his comfort zone. He just solid, defensively solid with the ball at his feet. Bassong you'd throw into the same category. Yeah, Wisdom was good as well. Still like to see him better in possession. And Olsen gives you that attacking, overlapping outlet. So it worked. But it's one game. And, you know, they need to maintain that level of consistency now, because there's no point having a line in the sand against Swansea, and as tough as it will be against Chelsea and Arsenal, then getting whacked in them next two games because you're back to square one then. So they need to push on from here now, I feel.
Do we talk about the elephant in the room, which was probably a rude way of describing Russell Martin, but he was suspended, and it's a discussion point that people link the fact that Norwich picked up their first clean sheet with his absence. I don't personally think that's as anywhere near as straightforward as that, but...
Yeah, this scapegoat culture doesn't go away easily online, does it? It was some of the... You know, I tweeted a couple of times after the game with perfectly positive, you know, assessments of what had happened, and got responses straight away about how, oh, well, that's Russell Martin out of the team then. Oh, surprise, surprise, he kept a clean sheet. So people have got a bee in their bonnet about it, haven't they? But Russell Martin has equally done a lot of good things for the club. I personally wouldn't bring him or Whittaker back in at Chelsea. I'd stick with that back four. I think Ryan Bennett is clearly benefiting from a run of games, and as long as he stays fit, could well stay there for the rest of the season. And Wisdom now has, at Everton, and then he obviously missed the Man City game, and then in this game against Swansea, he's proven that he's capable of doing it. So it's now up to him to grasp that chance, because if he doesn't make it here at Norwich, he's certainly not going to make it back at Liverpool. And it doesn't, you know, put his act together, then he's not going to earn a permanent move here. But if he continues to play like that, then you would say at the end of the season, Norwich will probably be interested in buying him.
Certainly in terms of centre-backs, it's all there until January. I think we might get some muddy waters come the transfer window, but we will see. I'd love to talk about all the game incidents, all the things that happened during the game, but I can't really think of many apart from the goal.
What about that Cameron Jerome header?
Yeah, Cam had a great chance early on. Gylfi Sigurdsson hit the crossbar. I do think John Ruddy had that covered, though, to be honest.
He meant it especially either, did he? He just sort of poked it a bit. Yeah, I know.
So, Len, let's skip on to the goal, shall we? As you mentioned, the second phase set pieces. Alec Neil is very certain on where Norwich's place in the Premier League is for these, because he knows exactly how well they're doing at them.
Near the top, I think you'll find. As he reiterated again after the game. Yeah, no... Robbie Brady, for me, he's the man. His delivery, to pick up Dave's point about the Jerome header, that was a Brady free kick, and the corner was a Brady corner. He is top drawer, that lad. So when you've got him in the side delivering balls from set pieces, you're always going to be a handful, particularly when you've got, to quote the manager, a monster to come on and use his aerial prowess. So, yeah, that certainly isn't... of all the things that... you go down the pecking order that Norwich need to work on, that isn't one of them, certainly.
And as you mentioned, Demercy and Bakani came on. There were a few grumbles when he came on for Cameron Jerome after 68 minutes, I think it was. I believe those boos were because they didn't want to see a like-for-like change. They wanted to see two strikers and Norwich push on. 2 minutes later, I think it was, Norwich ahead.
Yeah, I thought that was slightly odd. I mean, it was quite apparent... well, to me, sat on the sidelines, that the game plan was working. You know, Swansea were getting frustrated. They weren't making the progress that they wanted. And Norwich had them... If you'd have offered 0-0 and Norwich in the ascendancy at 70 minutes to, you know, most people, surely they would have taken it. So, but Mbakani, again, I think he's probably put himself as the number one striker again, as he was before the illness brought him down, although I think Alex Neil said he was going to go with Jerome anyway, didn't he?
He did. To emphasise the point, you know, if he feels in that instance Jerome was better suited to how he wanted to go at Man City, he'll play him. Whether Mbakani, as he had done prior to that, you know, he did more than enough to, you'd think, earn a run. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see how he goes Chelsea, but it certainly worked that way round, worked perfectly against Swansea, because, you know, Jerome should have scored first thing, but, you know, did what he needed to do for 70 minutes, and then you bring that guy on and he was just potent, wasn't he, just in terms of his all-round game.
wasn't perfect, was he? I mean, there was a few loose touches, but his hold-up play, I thought, was almost reminiscent of Grant Hull. There was one John Ruddy goal kick in particular, which he just brought down so easily and held off, I think it was Fernandez. I think he's clearly shown that he is a greater goal threat. Against Leicester, he got scored a good goal at Newcastle, and now he's obviously helped make the difference in this game. So I'd say he's the number one striker, but it can't be forgotten that Jerome certainly helped to soften Swansea up, and he played his part. And that's the thing. Another thing that was impressive on Saturday is that the team looked united. You know, there'd been a few changes, but they all looked like they were singing from the same hymn sheet, and they were all relatively happy. You know, Cameron Jerome tweeted positively after the game. He didn't seem worried that he was taken off and that they then scored, did he?
He didn't. He looked pretty frustrated at times during the first half, though. He was getting the running around whilst Swansea spread the ball around was getting pretty. Shift, it was a tough shift for him, definitely. And the goal was finished off by Johnny Howson. It was Umbakani's not back. Howson just sort of stayed still. Jonjo Shelvey left him a couple of yards out. Good header that went through Sigurdsson's legs. I mean, you know, when things aren't going for you, that comes off Sigurdsson's heel and goes wide, doesn't it? Let's be honest. So a little bit, I wouldn't call it luck, but, you know, it was obviously Norwich's day in the end.
Yeah, in the end it was, yeah. That's just, well, I wouldn't say down to luck. If Jonjo Shelvey tracks Johnny Howson, he doesn't score, does he? So that's your England international for you.
I was disappointed in him, actually, Shelvey. I thought he was a bit lateral with the way he moved the ball. Just to pick up on something you said a minute ago as well, Pat, about Brady. What do you think of him and Olsen on the left? I thought that showed the best combination that those two have managed so far.
Yeah, I mean Jarvis came in, and Bournemouth particularly, he was very good that day, and he was good in the cup, wasn't he, against West Brom? But, you know, I don't know whether we got a little bit carried away with Jarvis, because, you know, he clearly has something about him. But I think that, to take your point, yeah, I think Olsen and Brady might be the better of pairing of the three if you're going to perm two from three. Jarvis, certain games, yeah, he'll give you that, but I'm not sure defensively he's quite as sound as the other two guys. So yeah, it certainly worked Saturday, those two, yeah.
I think I'd agree. I thought they looked quite well balanced. But Jarvis, you know, as you're saying, it's a squad game, and the team look like they're a collective at the moment, and hopefully Jarvis has still got a role to play. You can't forget that goal against Bournemouth, can you? It was a cracker.
Indeed. And he will be back, although he's going to be out for several weeks, isn't it? So it might be a little while, yeah. It was interesting because I thought Brady kind of grew into the game. He almost looked human for the first time on Saturday, I thought, because there was a couple of misplaced passes in the first half, and he can't head a ball, we've almost learned, can we? Well, that's a bit harsh. It just wasn't very it just wasn't strong enough to beat Fabianski. It was a good chance.
Oh yeah, the one after half time, yeah. To be honest though, when I saw it back on the telly, he was a good way out, and he had to come around the ball. It wasn't kind of, you know, in front of him and go and attack it. He almost had to get laterally to meet the ball. But yeah, I suppose, you know, if it was Grant Holt on the end of that, it'd have been in the goal. But no, if you're running a campaign to get him out of side, mate, I'm not going to support that.
I am absolutely not. I've written more than enough in praise of Robbie Brady to know that that's not true. We just
player of the season already, isn't he? He's pretty much got it in the bag.
I think he's leading the contest, and it's probably no great shakes that he's not quite good at heading the ball as Grant Holt, so we'll give him that one. Johnny Howson scoring on his 100th start, I think it was, for Norwich. A stat of a start, and apparently I haven't checked that, but that's what we know. Anyway, let's hear from, shall we, Alec Neil, Gary O'Neill, Johnny Howson, and Alex Tetti.
Yeah, I think the setup was certainly different from what we've been doing. I think when you're sort of performing well in the way we were, but you're still not winning games, then you need to find an alternative to make sure you win the games. You know, I thought we came very close to that last week against Man City, and then we altered it again today. And as I said before, sort of tactics and sort of shapes and different things like that, we can vary. I mean, we're adaptable in terms of how we approach games, and I felt for this game to sort of soak up a bit of pressure at times and hit on the counter attack was going to be the best option for us to win the match. And to be honest, it's not as pretty as the way I would like. I mean, I wanted to see us dominating games and different things, but the most important thing is winning matches, you know, because we've come away a lot of times and says, yeah, we performed really well and picked up nothing. And to be honest, in a week's time, nobody's really caring how you play. It's about winning games, and we managed to do that today.
Obviously, it went against the way we've played the last year or so since he's come in a little bit. We've always wanted to be the side in control and the ones with the ball and sort of the attacking force in the game, but we've lost four on the trot in the league, so we went about it slightly differently today. Tried to sort of nullify the threats that Swansea pose and see if we could get one on the break or from a set piece, and we managed to.
Just mentioning there, we was watching a bit of the Bournemouth Newcastle game before the game, and some of the stats in that game, I think at one point Bournemouth had had 15 shots to their one, and I believe Newcastle had won the game 1-0. So as we said before the game, performance wise hasn't been too bad of late, but you know, the bottom line is about points, collecting points over the total season, and we said however we do it today, we've got to get something from the game.
No, it was nice. I wasn't expecting it at all. I thought John or Gary Neal was going to be, but the manager surprised me, and I'm happy to be the captain. We won, clean sheet, and 3 points, very important 3 points today.
It's more of a reaction than anything else. I'd obviously we work on the set pieces, you know, before a game on a Friday, and I've been doing that role a couple of times now. I spoke with Dean, the keeper coach, and he sets us up for certain things, and I was discussing of just staying around the keeper, peel off to the back stick, and you know, he gives that a bit of advice. So yeah, obviously massive thanks goes to him for the goal. And the actual, it was just more of a reaction than anything else, you know. So just right place at the right time, I guess.
No, we needed that. We needed to win, and we did, and I'm very pleased. We know we have two important games coming up, so we needed to get something out of this game, and I'm very pleased for Johnny and the team and everyone. So good win.
Well, there's a lot of people there. Is anyone looking at the table at the moment, the Premier League table? Paddy, you're shaking your head.
No. Only that they've got back in touch with that group. I did have a look before the weekend, and what surprised me though actually was Villa when I saw when the table flashed up at full time yesterday after 0-0 with 5 points. So what's that now? 7 behind Norwich. That's a big old chunk now, this stage of the season.
Well, they've lost 9 of their last 12 games because the only win they got was the first game at Bournemouth. So, I mean, that just... And they were incredibly lucky, I thought, against Manchester City. If Kevin De Bruyne doesn't try and backheel from 6 yards out, then Man City would have won that game, and they had so many chances.
It is looking that little bit more healthy for Norwich, though, isn't it? They're, you know, have got the comfort of being at least a win or one of the bottom three having to win to get close to them, but I suppose the big thing is that they're back above Chelsea.
They are back above Chelsea, and we'll talk about Chelsea in a moment. It does sort of emphasise the strength of the division though, doesn't it? We can bring this on to Swansea because, you know, West Brom, Stoke, Watford, I suppose, are maybe a slight wild card there. We don't quite know what they're going to do over the rest of the season, but you know, Swansea are a decent side. I know they're in a rut at the moment, but you wouldn't necessarily say they're prime relegation candidates. So then you've got Norwich, Chelsea, well, they're going to improve, and then you've got basically four teams and three places. You know, seems like it's quite a small fight for survival this year.
Well, it's very early yet still, though, isn't it? I mean, what are we now? How many games have we played? 12, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be definitively sort of putting clubs in blocks quite yet. I mean, let's see where we are at Christmas, you know, another couple of months or so of football. But yeah, I mean, you would in all probability say it's going to be the Villas of this world, and you know, maybe not West Brom. I think Pulis will do enough. Sunderland, I fear for them, even with Allardyce's touch. And Watford, I wouldn't rule them out yet. You know, if they have it go on an October like Norwich had moving forward, then they're going to be back in the mix. Bournemouth, obviously, as well. So I think for me, it's not in any way really shifted radically from the start of the season. You always thought Norwich would be in it with about, say, 6 or 7 clubs, and I think that's how it'll pan out over the course of the season, mate. Yeah,
Well, Norwich fans would take finishing where they are now, wouldn't they, if it was offered to them? So I think Newcastle will pull ahead, and I agree with Pad that Watford will sink back down there. I think their squad's just a bit too much of a mixture for them to be consistent. Hopefully Norwich can contribute to dragging them back down towards there, and well, is it next month that game is?
That is coming up.
But going into this international break, I don't think things are in the worst worst state, really. I think hopefully supporters can look ahead to the rest of the season without too much negativity.
Chelsea are in a right mess. Jose's going to be in charge of them when Norwich go there, Pad?
Do you reckon?
Have they got a game between now and then? No. Then he will be.
Yeah.
I mean, they did all right against Stoke. They lost, but they they've got so many good players. They can still move the ball around. They should have had a penalty, as far as I was concerned.
What a pass from Shaqiri for Stoke. Finally saw that bit of class from him. It was just inch perfect, wasn't it? I can't wait for this game because my dad is a season ticket holder in the Gerrard stand and has been for 15 years and sits next to a diehard Chelsea fan who has also now been a Norwich season ticket holder for 15 years just because he loves coming to the football. So if Norwich beat them, then, and he's a diehard Jose Mourinho fan as well, like he was desperate for him to come back to the club, so if Norwich beat them, then he's never going to live it down.
We'll have to get an update on that one then. How do you see it going, Pad? I find it a really difficult one heading into it to sort of fathom it.
Yeah, well it is, because the reality is you look at the two respective squads and the fact Chelsea at home, the champions, then you'd say Norwich won't get anything at all, but filter it through where we are at the minute, which is Norwich above Chelsea in the table. Who'd have thought that? Nobody. So they are in serious straits, no two ways about it. I didn't see any of the Stoke games, so I can't comment on that, but they're just in a rut. You know, clearly all is not well behind the scenes. You know, you look at Hazard, how has that man's grace fall from grace, being so steep from the back end of last season to where he is now? There's a lot of problems with that club, looking at it from the outside in. So, really, if Norwich go there and for me, get to half time and the level or even better, then I think you can get something. But you just think it could easily switch if Chelsea go 2-0 up after 8 minutes. Then the reality is the confidence to start flooding back a little bit, like what we saw with Norwich in the immediate aftermath of Housen's goal. It was almost like flicking a switch, and if Chelsea click, then Norwich won't get anything at all. So yeah, as you said at the start of that question, it's very difficult to forecast, but there's no fear there. I don't think Norwich won't go there fearful, and they only have to go back to the last away game. You know, if you can go to Man City and play as they did against a team who were whacking teams out of sight there, you know, fives and sixes, then there's no reason they can't go to a Chelsea, stuttering Chelsea or not, and get something.
And it's being pragmatic, given of course the other away game at Newcastle, who were so out of shape, and again the switch flicked and away they went, and Norwich on the end of that one.
That game was very slightly different to the one we've just seen, wasn't it? The most open game of football and possibly one of the tightest.
Yeah, very true. We should touch on Euro 2016 playoff games, a little bit of Norwich interest with Alex Tetti with Norway, Martin Olsson with Sweden, and of course Wes Houlihan and Robbie Brady with Ireland. They all going through. I don't know enough about the entirety of European football to have a proper gauge, but they all strikes me like they've all got good chances.
Yeah, Norway have got Hungary, so I think Alex Tetti's been picking Kyle Lafferty's brains a little bit to find out a bit about them. Tetti scored in both of their last two qualifiers, but they narrowly lost in Italy, which saw them not go through automatically. So Norway, pretty decent side. I think it would be the first time they've qualified for a tournament since 2000 or 2002. So yeah, I think they go into their one with pretty big hopes. Ireland have got Bosnia and Herzegovina, who kind of depend on Edin Dzeko. And Sweden have got Denmark, so that's a big Scandinavian derby, isn't it?
Big Scandinavian derby. Will you be watching any of these, Pad?
Yeah, I might take a few in, although I am actually off to Colchester this Saturday, believe it or not. I'm going to go and watch my boys.
The Cov.
Yeah, probably bought me ticket before they got knocked out of the FA Cup.
I was going to say, it's a bit of an aftermath going on, isn't it? Losing to Northampton strikes me as a painful one.
But they'll be getting all those loan players back, which is quite a topic at the minute. But I think, as apparently Jacob Murphy, of the four that they've got there, was the only one who was granted permission to play. So I think that tells you that where he features under Alec Neil this season. But the other three lads, yeah, I don't know why we've suddenly morphed on the Coventry City. But yeah, the other three should be back, so... Yeah, I'll be taking a bit of that in, a bit of live football, but I'm sure I'll watch a bit of it. When's it? Thursday through Tuesday, I think, isn't it?
They're all spread out as well, aren't they? So there's a pub in Colchester called the Duke of Norfolk. If you need, if you want to make yourself feel a bit more at home, but you need your walking boots to get to the stadium because it's right on the outskirts of town, isn't it?
Get on your bike.
No, a bit of driving.
There's a new feature for you.
A bit of a drive job, I think. A12 car park. No, I'll just talk about the car park now as well.
I was going to stick a GoPro on you and get bike footage. It'll be brilliant. Right, we better wrap this up because we've been going on quite a while. Enjoy international breaks, everyone. Enjoy your trip, Pad. I'm going nowhere, so literally. Anyway, so all the normal stuff, pinken.com, mustardtv.co.uk, Eastern Daily Press, Evening News. You know it all. We will be back after Stamford Bridge. Yeah, we will be, won't we? God only knows what we'll get there. Until then, thanks for listening and goodbye.